Yeah. Now you're a friend of Amy's, is that right? Amy Weintraub?
Amy Weintraub, yes, I've been on her faculty. Amy and I know each other quite well over the years. And yes, there's long backstory there, Nishkala. And yes, I've gone and I've been at Soul of Yoga to do the trainings with her. I come in as the mental health person frequently.
Okay.
And then I also do quite a bit of work with Kripalu. I live not too far from Kripalu in New York State.
That's where you are now?
I'm in Albany, New York, yes.
Oh, okay. Okay. And somehow I thought you were in Tucson. I don't know why. Okay. Yeah.
Maybe that's in the future. Who knows?
So you're in Albany. Okay. Yeah. You know, I used to teach at Kripalu quite a bit.
And did then, you?
Yeah. It just got too big for me.
Changed.
I'm a whisper in a sports stadium and it was just too much.
Yeah. The scale makes a difference, doesn't it?
Well, yeah. Just too much going on at one time, you know?
Yeah.
I'd have them all quiet and then they'd go into the lunchroom and it would be like, you know, or whatever. So, I mean, I love Kripalu, but it's just not for me right now.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So finding this right connection, the right alignment, the right breath, the way in which it wants to emerge now, Nishkala, let's just find that as we just take some quiet time before I start the interview, okay? So this is really about opening sacred space.
Yes.
In the ways that you know how.
You know what? I'm going to just try something for just a second, if okay. I'm going to see if I can get rid of these headsets.
Oh, sure.
Let me see if I can plug my microphone. Okay. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Not well. Okay, I can take these out. Oh, that might be better. Okay, try it again.
Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, it's not great. Is there
Can you turn up the volume on your machine?
That's what I'm trying to figure out how to do. Okay, here we go. No, it's all the way up. Okay. Oh, it says I still have headsets in there.
Oh, so unplug the headsets or
they're talking about the external speakers. I'm going to go back to headset because I just got this and I don't really know how to use it. So I'm going to go back to what I know how to use, which is a headset. Okay.
That's good.
You know, I had to go and get so much equipment because now I'm doing so much online. I never do things online. It's not my thing, but
yeah,
like
good.
This. Okay. I'm sorry you have all this technical issues, but okay.
It's just what we're adapting to with all of this 2D.
I know.
Green
it's
stuff.
Crazy. It's crazy. Amy and I had this long talk the other day. It's such not a media for the two of us.
There we go.
This won't stay in. That's why I hate wearing these because they never stay in.
Oh, you have those kind, you know, there's softer ones that are available, Nishkala, that aren't that hard plastic. Have you seen those?
Yeah, I have some, but they stop the sound completely and I start getting echoes. Anyway, I'm good. Okay.
Okay.
Let's go in.
So, yes, let's go in. So wonderful to be present to all that is.
Yeah. There you go. I
okay.
see.
Where are we going? We went.
We did. We
Namaste.
Did.
Namaste.
Yeah. Namaste. Thank you so much.
My
yes.
Joy.
Yes. It's a delight to have this opportunity to drink from the well together, this incredible capacity that we have to witness and then move through all of these realities.
Yes.
Ishkala.
Yes.
So I just want to say that we just did that together, you know, in these last little moments.
It's very sweet. Thank you.
Oh, well, you're most welcome. So we have, oh, I don't know, maybe 8 or so questions, and they have been taking the full hour. And what I love to invite is that if something else shows up that you feel might be useful for the readers to learn about how you went through a variety of transformational practices, processes, in whatever context, that we invite them and welcome them in now so that they might take form. Similar to how a Tibetan temple is architected, that you have to go through that long corridor, right, with all of the tankas and paintings to make sure that we're really coming into that quality that wants to be lifted up at this time for the sake of the readers. Okay, so I'm doing an invocation so that no matter what, no matter where, that we mostly have fun together. That's really my criteria.
The most important thing. The most important thing.
It totally is. So this is about this quality of inspiration. And as we talk, you may not have one project that you'll call from, but it could be a whole rainbow of projects that you have been involved in, you are involved in, or that you plan to be involved in, or that are emerging. So
wow.
That's the nature of the container that we're going to breathe in and out of together for this next little while. And so it's about accessing the how it begins for you. So imagine perhaps one of the projects that you've done or one thing that you've prepared for, that moment of spark or inspiration. Can you like tap into that just to give it some language around how you felt it, how you sensed it, and then thought?
Yeah, you know, I think for a container, I have to go back to my initial container rather than take from my project, because I think what will happen is you'll see as you're interviewing people that they're all so different and how we all came this, and I think my path is probably quite different than most people you're going to interview, in that I was a monk for 18 years. So my path started with my own seeking. I had no interest in becoming a teacher. I had no interest in, I never thought about anything like that, but I had this incredible burning within me to learn the truth and to learn who I was. So I think that that's where it all comes from. That's my vat that I go back to. And it's interesting during this time of whatever we want to call it, I like shelter in place. I think that's a nice way of putting it. I'm talking to all these different people and I just wrote to my friend and I said, you know, this reminds me of when I was a monk. You know, we never went out to dinner. We never went to movies. We never did a lot of those things. Our whole life was based on our spiritual life. And so I think from there, you know, maybe I could just give a little bit of a background, if that's okay with you. I was originally trained in Western medicine and I was a physician's assistant. And I always had that desire to serve people. That was my thing. Even now, you know, as horrible as what we're seeing, I said to my husband, you don't understand, if you're not a healthcare worker, you don't understand what that calling is and why you're willing to put yourself on the front lines for it. But I understand it. I remember that that bonding together, that especially in a time of crisis, and we all worked double shifts, triple shifts if we had to. So I come from that, and then I became very disillusioned with Western medicine, very disillusioned with it, and decided to leave it. As I was doing that, I found that there was this emptiness, if you can call it that, that I felt in my heart, that I needed to find out what it was, not necessarily fill it, but find out what it was. What was it yearning for? And serendipitously, I met a man, not a romantic situation, but just a man who then showed me the way to the yoga. And it was, as soon as I walked in, I felt that I was home and I knew why I was there. And then from there started to take classes and started to learn what yoga really was, not the physical, not the superficial, but that place that was empty in me. It was starting to fill up. It was starting to remember. It was starting to get full again. And so I think it was from that, my fullness, that I started to teach. I don't know if that makes sense.
It makes total sense. So as you beautifully describe and shape this journey of moving deeper in to something that then created some new sense of self, that quality is exactly the quality that is the starting point. And that, yeah, that landing, that coming, yeah, in, right, that landing, coming in, aligning. We want to, again, if it's okay with you, Nishkala, to invite some more features of that fullness that you felt as you began to embody more fully whatever this is, this part of you or these parts of you that started to congeal or feel like they belonged together, let's say.
Well, I think they had to be born first. They were in seed form. And they hadn't come to fruition. And that's why I didn't understand what they were, because I tried to understand it with the mind, and the mind can't understand things like that. It has to be with the heart that understands it. Right. And it was not part of my culture. It was not, certainly not part of the medical institution that I was working in. And I didn't know where to go. It was one of those things that you don't know what it is, so therefore you can't find the remedy for it.
Okay.
And when I walked in, actually the first time I saw the picture of Swami Satchidananda, I said to myself, I don't know what he has, but whatever he has, I want it. And I'm going to do everything I can to get it. Because I saw a sense of peacefulness, but not just peaceful. There was a sense of joy underlining that peace. And I think that's really, to me, the crux of what's happening in the spiritual world. People are getting, they may be getting something, but it's not necessarily the depth of joy that allows us in times like this, in times of need, in times of crisis, to go to that place and find solace. Otherwise, it's very interesting because one of the analogies I often do, I talk about, is that the worst punishment that you can give anyone in our society is to put them in solitary confinement. Yet monks crave it. So what's the difference? One is a calm mind and one is a tumultuous mind. Because that's what happens. You're alone with yourself. Again, I just got an email from one of my friends and she said, I found out through this whole isolation time that I actually like myself. And I thought, yeah, that's a great thing to find out. So I think that from that well, like the Sufis talk about, taking from the overflow, not from the depth. And I think that's what started to happen. This overflow started to come. And then from there, back to your original question, is why I decided to start teaching. Because the fullness was just coming out of me. And it wasn't like I was organizing a class. The class organized me. Mm-hmm. And people started coming and saying, we want to learn, we want to learn, we want to learn. And can I just tell a very funny antidote to this? It's there was teaching in a senior center. And I had to sign a contract, nothing spiritual. It all had to be very practical and pragmatic. Mm-hmm. And so that wasn't me. That wasn't the way I lived my life or taught. But I thought, okay, to benefit. So I taught that way for a couple of weeks. And then I walked in about, I think it was the third or fourth week. And there was a group of the seniors clustered together. And they said, there she is. And I said, oh, okay. And they called me over and they said, sit down. I said, okay. I sat down and they said, we want to know what you do in the morning. Aww. We want to know what your practice is, because we know that it's not just what you're teaching us. And I actually went through and did, you know, I said to them, okay, first I chant, let me hear you chant. You know, it was the whole, and because they're, you know, they were tuned, they knew that to get to the depth that they allowed themselves to see in me. It wasn't just me. It was them reflecting in me.
That's right.
It had to be deeper.
Right.
Yeah.
So you're perfectly describing this phenomena that I'm inviting people to tap into in the interviews, Nishkala, which is as the embodiment of something working together more harmoniously, more in tune, more connected with all that is, there's a quality that you described as the overflowing. And that might be the way that we together now begin to understand your move from me to we. And then that, yes, further articulation of the attunement that was being presented without your words as a teacher, yeah, but as what? What did they pick up on? What were they actually experiencing?
Well, I think that, see, I think what you just did is you just made it so clear and so simple, the difference between a spiritual teacher and a teacher. Because, and this is what I keep saying, even in the yoga therapy world, you have to keep the yoga in yoga therapy. If you don't keep the yoga in it, it's just Western medicine that's watered down. That's mm-hmm. how I see it. Mm-hmm. And so for me, the most important thing is the transmission from the teacher to the student. And then the student then becomes the teacher and transmits that. Yoga has always been like that. I mean, all this that we're doing online now is really difficult for some of us. And I just wrote up a whole little etiquette for online, because mm-hmm. people are laying down, they're eating, and they pretend it's not like it's a real classroom. Mm. And so I said, you know, the way I teach is your feedback. And if I can't see your face, it's very difficult for me to do that. So this is why I'm really glad we're doing this as a video, because that's how I've learned to teach, and that's my way of teaching, the imparting of the energy, not just the imparting of the knowledge.
That's it. So then I'm going to take us back to the image that you presented by saying, you know, I was a monk, and these times remind me of what I know as having yeah. been a monk.
Yeah. Yep.
So let's play with time a little bit here, can
okay.
we?
Sure.
So if it's flowing through and disappearing for many as they learn that they don't understand self-shelter,
I'd like to invite a little creative bypass here in the energy field that we're co-creating. What is it in particular about your, I'm just going to call it monkdom, that's now flowing through you, that is finding a new frame, a new way, maybe a new dance? I'm not sure quite what, but that's what I'd like to invite out a little bit more, for more to hear and see from you.
You mean about this particular time or just in general?
Well, let's imagine the bridge back into your monkdom experience. Okay. And that is the same bridge that you've traveled back and forth all these years. Okay. And now there's this amazing experience that many are experiencing, being self-sheltered without the training that you had. And so it's kind of like unearthing again those deeper qualities, yeah, of that early experience. I'm not sure, but it's occurring to me as a place to kind of peek into in the interview,
yeah,
here.
Yeah, yeah. I think though, I guess one of the things that sort of caught my mind is it's really not a bridge, because I'm not going back and forth.
Okay,
I'm
good.
Living in two places simultaneously. And that's a little bit tricky sometimes. There's a beautiful saying from the Bhagavad Gita that I think it really is how I live my life. And that's probably why I love it so much. And it says to keep the hand in society while the heart rests with the divine. And I think that's really what those years of being a monk and being trained as a teacher and teaching has taught me, that you can't abandon the heart because you're working. The hand has to keep doing what the hand does. We have to keep our services going. But if I forget that my heart is connected and I am one with my higher self, whatever you want to call it, cosmic consciousness, call it whatever. But to me, when I'm not connected, this hand can't do a good job, no matter what I'm doing. And that's why when I'm teaching, I always say to the students, take 10 minutes before the class, get quiet. Use the word centering, smudge, whatever you want to do, but using that time to draw in, to remember who you are. Because I know for me, if I'm rushed and I walk into a class and I don't remember who I am, it's clumsy. And then I have to say, okay, I need a minute or so. Let me go in and do that. So I think that the mystical and the practical have to go hand in glove.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's really, it's not really a bridge that I come back and forth with. It's something when I'm sitting in front of someone, I'm not thinking of the techniques that I want to use.
Mm-hmm.
I'm feeling them. And then afterwards, the techniques can come in. So that's just the way that I function. And I think part of it, like you said, is training. After 18 years of being trained like that and a certain practices, that you don't leave it. You know, it becomes, I was watching someone practicing a dance step and they said, oh, finally it went to muscle memory. You know, they didn't have to think about it. And I think it's like that with the practices and our own practice. After a while, you're not saying, oh, I should be kind to this person, or I should pick up that piece of paper that's on the street. And it's not something you think of, it's something you just do.
Right, right. Yeah. So if someone hasn't yet had the experience of being simultaneously in two or more places at once, or even knowing that that's possible,
yeah,
I have two questions. One, I love that you took gestures as you were describing your experience. And I'm wondering how that embodied capacity that you're, at least I'm experiencing, you arrive into and from and through, what are some of the ways that you might help a real newcomer to practice begin to get interested in those deeper ways of living and being?
Well, I think this time is helping people with that. First of all, you have to understand that we need time to do this. It can't be just squeezed in the middle of a busy day. And I think that's something that we don't have so much in our society. It was very funny when I lived in the Bay Area in California for many, many years. And what we began, and we always had a place for meditation, if not a whole room, because sometimes we just didn't have the space. But to me, that was one of the most important things in my home. And what we noticed that as all the Asians were coming in from Asia, the houses were changing. They were now building them with shrine rooms. They were now building them with meditation and prayer rooms. Mm-hmm. And I thought to myself, this every home, if we had this, would already have the structure for someone to go in and begin practice. But I think it's hard when we don't have a specific place or a specific time. Then we're thinking, oh, when do I fit this in? So I think the first thing I would say to someone is respect the practice that you've chosen. Have real respect for it as if it is something that's going to lead you into the light, which it does, into love. So I would say that's the first thing, have respect for it. And the second thing is make sure you really love it. Because if you love something, you'll do it.
Right, right.
And if you don't love it, I hear people say, oh, I hate doing exercise. I said, then why do you do it? I know it's good for me. I said, you know, if you don't love it, it's not going to be as good for you.
Yeah.
And I think it's the same thing with spiritual practice. You know, when I go in, I'm excited. Even after all these years, I get to be by myself, you know, with myself. And so I think picking, and that's why I think so many people start with a physical practice, because a lot of people feel the physical. But I would say, I always encourage people, if you pick a physical, always pick a subtle to go with it, to wrap around the physical. So the physical is make your body strong, make your nervous system strong, but then make sure that there's something subtle that you're practicing every day, because then you get the inner and the outer that can meet. Otherwise, you're just doing the physical and there's no coordination with the subtle. We have to start feeling our hearts as well as our bodies and our minds. And I think most people don't, for various reasons. It's too painful. That's not their way, whatever. But I think that's what begins to happen. Does that make sense?
Oh, yes. It's well demonstrated, too. People walking around from the head up. Yep. So if that's the more consistent way that many people have been, at least in the Western world, moving and spending time, I love the way you compare the physical with the subtle practices as a way to offer a distinction at the beginning of practice to understand how information, right, and energy begin to change.
I'm curious
in that regard, since I'm assuming that your very established personal practice nourishes you still, that during those years when you were collaborating with others, what was it like to connect with others on that more subtle basis where there could be a shared space that you all worked from or imagined the future into being from, rather than just the doing part, that more being part? Can you remember a few stories of when that lit up in a group setting?
You mean from my teaching or from when I was a monk?
Not necessarily from your teaching, but when you were collaborating with others as a teacher or part of a team to create others.
Well, I think going back to our clinical team, I think is a very interesting experience, and also probably plays closer to what people do in their lives, because I have different sections of my life. So I had my childhood, obviously, and where, by the way, a lot of this developed in childhood. I could see auras, I could hear people talking that weren't there, you know, things like that, which I think a lot of children have. But what happens is they're dissed. They're told, that's ridiculous, don't do that, don't see that, forget about it. And then there's the monk part, which was very strong. And then there was the part of combining my spirituality with my medical training, which was very interesting. So we had this clinical team that we were putting together, all this research that we were doing. And I don't know if you remember the original, well, it's not the original, I think it was the second Star Trek, The Next Generation. They had Counselor Troy. Counselor Troy was the empathic.
Yeah.
So that's what they nicknamed me and the clinical team. Because what will happen is they were all talking clinically, what this person had and where the blockage was and this and that. And I would then, all of a sudden, I would be sitting there and I would say, you know, she looked very sad. And they'd all kind of turn and look at me. And they'd say, well, how did you discern that? You know, how did you determine that? And I'd say, I felt it in my heart.
Yeah. So
even though I had the scientific mind, because you had to work in that situation, but my heart was still, again, connected. And what I would do is I would look at the people and realize that there's so much more to heart disease, to cancer, to anything than just the clinical physical results of testing.
Right.
So that was something that really stayed with me, and I became Counselor Troy, and also my other nickname was Jiminy Cricket. Conscience, and that was right. Sitting on everybody's shoulder. And, you know, things like we would have these long planning meetings. We'd start at 8 o'clock in the morning and we'd go sometimes to 8 o'clock at night. Mm. We'd just bring in food because we had to eat. And everyone would say, okay, let's not stop. Let's just eat as we're meeting. And I would say, no, we have to nurture ourselves and nourish ourselves. Then we can come back and we're clearer and we can, they hated it. So what it came to is that they would say to me, are you going to be there on Saturday? Because I didn't have to be there at all the meetings. Some were financial, some were other. And I'd say, no, I can't be there on the Friday. Oh, good. We can eat and meet then. So that's kind of the role I played without, hopefully without being too obnoxious about it, because it's my belief. And it's also my belief that they can feel better and be better with it, but you can't push it on someone. Mm-hmm. It's what I call spiritual indigestion. You can't give people spiritual indigestion. There is still indigestion. So I would try to do it in a subtle or funny way sometimes.
Yeah. You know,
humor helps. Yeah.
So I'm hearing you speak about a wonderful, and many people are sharing this now in many contexts on the planet, Nishkala, about having established a heart and mind that work together, right? Just to use a simple way of describing it.
Yeah.
And finding themselves in teams, in organizations, communities, families, where there's a pushback, where there's a resistance, a fear, most likely, I would assume. Mm-hmm. Do you have a story to tell about an interaction when someone's light bulb went on and the awakening of their heart occurred at some time in your relationships?
Well, the one that first came to my mind was very sweet. It was a very sweet encounter. And it was around the retreats that we did for the heart disease. So we would have these week-long retreats and people would come from all over the world, actually, to take part. It was basically a yoga retreat. It was just, you know, we had vegetarian food and three classes a day and meditations in the evening. And then they got a lot of medical information too. When someone took one, the second time they came back, we called it an advanced retreat. And they came back because they already knew a lot of the basic stuff and we now could teach them secondary. So when I of course, I'm not a nutritionist, so I didn't really talk a lot about the diet. And the person that did talked about it from a clinical standpoint. So she said, we eat this because there's no cholesterol and it doesn't affect our arteries, etc. That was her job. So when they came back for the advanced retreat, then it was my job again. And we were sitting there one day and I was talking about the diet. And then I said, you know, it's not the only reason we do the diet is cholesterol. And they kind of looked at me and they said, what is it? And I said, we do it because of ahimsa. And I described ahimsa as having love and respect for all beings everywhere, without exception. And this one man was sitting there. He actually was a physician, retired physician. And he was listening to me and his eyebrows were crossed and listening to me trying to figure this out. And then he just went like this and raised one finger. It was so sweet. And I said to him, yes. And he said to me, you know, I never heard about this ahimsa stuff before. He said, I didn't know what you were talking about. He said, but then I started thinking about it and going over my life in the last year when I've changed to this diet. He said, do you think that's why butterflies land on me now?
Goodness. There it is.
You know, yeah. And that kind of makes me go on for another couple years, right? When you hear something. And I thought to myself, how much more beautiful could someone put it than that, right?
There it is.
Summed it up. So that was definitely a moment that I still feel. And I still feel that moment. Yeah.
I can feel it too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So these affirmations, Nishkala, throughout the lifespan, that the whatever it is that you've found and embodied and then shared out into the world has an impact. That's the story that I'm trying to weave together from these many folks all over the world. And, you know, as we think about coming into the final few questions now that we've got just about, whatever, 15 minutes, I'm curious, still feeling the butterflies landing oh so many years ago, and the butterflies that will still land, right, coming into the future. I'm wondering, as we create a bigger sitting at the well, a bigger meditation chamber for us all, that these reflective capacities of these divine gifts might be more present. And some people might not even understand that.
Yeah.
So we have to find language. I'm calling them qualities,
right,
not necessarily practices, that emerge that can be felt and seen and learned. So what are some of the qualities that you might share now that continue to populate your world and that you can share with others?
Well, you know, I think one of the big snags, if I can use that, is when things start to happen to a lot of us, like this experience or like sitting down and people coming over and saying, I just want to sit near you because I'm feeling agitated and you feel peaceful, whatever it may be, we have to keep remembering it's not us. It's not the small us.
Right.
And I see people saying, oh, it's not me. And they go like this. Well, that's also too much. I think it's a little bit like when someone says something sweet to you, you just kind of go in and go, You know, it's knowing that all the years of practice all the years of not just formal practice, but all the years of taking your mind and saying, you know what? That might not be the way things are. That person may be really in pain right now. And that's mm-hmm. why they're acting out. All mm-hmm. those years, and you'd say to yourself, okay, something is working. Something is changing. You know, there's a beautiful analogy I use a lot. It comes from the space and aeronautics field, that when the rocket ship goes up, it mm-hmm. gains altitude. Mm-hmm. When it starts to make its orbit, it gains, it changes what they call attitude. So if there's a little window in the spaceship and you can see the moon, if it changes its attitude, the moon disappears. So this is how I use this, because this is how I see my actions and the actions of other people. That if we can keep our attitude focused on the moon or on our spiritual nature or on our hearts, then whatever else is going on around us is sucked into that, like a great waterfall or whatever it is, watching it just go into that. And I think that's really what it is. It's not about me. It's about what I've taken and done to create this energy around me. And it's interesting because in the Buddhist tradition, especially Zen, they have an expression that's called stinking of enlightenment. And I think that that happens a lot. People start to think, oh, it's me, or aren't I a great teacher? And I think that's the biggest trap, is to be able to understand that this person in front of you is exactly the same. And that's really one of the reasons I wrote the Namaste Effect, because I really wanted people to start realizing that who they were sitting with was the right person at the time, and a person who has the divine in them, just like you do. It's exactly the same. I never realized that now we'd be doing this instead of this or shaking hands, but that was my intention, but not like this. But so I think that we have this big container, but we have to be careful to make sure that we're actually filling that container before we invite all these people into the container. To me, again, I need that overflow, and then I can have these big containers. Otherwise, I think this is where we burn out. We burn out because we think that we have more spiritual energy than we really do, or physical for that matter. Yeah.
So these laws that you refer to, you know, are the elemental laws of the universe. I mean, they really truly are so beautifully represented elementally in the way that you describe your being, how you've communicated the benefits of practice in your being. That's, if it's not a bridge or a light beam or a funnel of some sort, it's a movement toward some quality of a new experience together. And I didn't read your book, The Namaste Effect, but it's the recognition is what I'm resting in right now. Mm-hmm. And so final question here, knowing that there's this quality of emergence, right? There's this quality of something having been seeded, you've demonstrated in your lifetime, we're in this new time now as a collective. And I'd like you to put on your Swami hat here for a moment.
I don't have any orange. Where's my orange? Yes. So,
but also just to realize that as you look forward, as you sense in to the what's happening and what might happen next, and for the benefit of the young ones who will read this, Nishkala. Yeah,
that's
the young ones who are coming next and what they might be grounded in, what might be some ways for them to continue to stay heartful as they look around and see that one in front of them as their teacher?
Yeah, that's really a vast question. like someone asked me the other day why I became a monk. And I just smiled. I said, it's not something that you sit down and calculate. It's a calling. And I think also we're all being called. But we're not listening. Not to be a monk, but to go within. And I think that when we're younger, if we can get that, and that's what happened to me. I was young when I got that. When I got that message that there's something more that we have. And, you know, I think of all the ways and all the practices within yoga, I think there's one way that's the simplest and surest and quickest way to remember who we are. And that's through service. Because if you go and work with someone who's less fortunate in any way, it can be in any different way. It doesn't have to be money or status or health or anything. You will see that spark of divinity in them. And as you work with them, your spark will get bigger. And the two sparks will become a big flame. And to me, that's the best way of getting out of yourself, remembering why you're here. And we're here to share that love with people. And to me, service is the main thing. Now, to all, also, what that means is to do really good service. You have to have your own practice, because otherwise you'll be thrown off with it.
Yeah.
And I think it's a whole thing, but if you want to really see what the heart does, serve someone less fortunate.
Beautiful. Thank you. So just capturing that extraordinary kind of invocation, let's call it, for the future, is there as a final offering an image, a gesture, a favorite sutra that might further land that invocation that you just provided into a different form? Just going into some more creative wanderings here.
Well, since you mentioned sutra, and you know how much I love the sutras, the second sutra always does that for me, and especially the way I've experienced the second sutra. And it's yoga chitta vritti nirodha, which to me is very clearly means that yoga is the uniting of consciousness in the heart. That's where it's united. That's where it comes from. That's where it goes back to. And when I'm with you and my consciousness is in my heart, that's who I see in you. I see the consciousness in you. If I forgot about my heart, then I'm going to see how you look. I'm going to see how you dress. I'm going to see if you're wealthy. That's what I'm going to see. But when I'm in my heart, all I see is the love in your heart. And we then are one. Namaste. So that to me, that sutra is just, and I know why they put it at the beginning. Sets the tone.
Well, thank you so much, Nishkala. What a delight to spend these moments with you.
That's how I feel.
Namaste.
Namaste.
And blessings. Bye for now.
Bye for now. Thank you.
Thank you.